All right, Alexander, let's do a debriefing of the Geneva summit between Russian President Vladimir Putin and US President Joe Biden. A few highlights that I saw, and then you can get into an overall description as to how you saw things. Some highlights. Biden did have a meltdown with one of the reporters, CNN reporter, which was interesting. It made the rounds. He apologized afterwards. Anyway, I thought that was interesting. The interesting part was that Vladimir Putin took questions from the press, Russian and foreign, and very aggressive questions as well. Joe Biden, when he took the podium, he actually read from a piece of paper that says, "I have the list of the reporters they've told me to ask questions of." He actually said that, and he didn't take any questions from any Russian media. I thought that says a lot. Biden made the claim that he says, "I did what I came to do," and you can explain that. You can elaborate on that. So he says that he's happy with the meeting. We have diplomats that will be returning. That's probably the one thing that was decided on. And that's oh, one more thing. One more thing is that I think Biden was saying a couple of fibs, especially with regards to 1-6, where he said, which was an interesting one. Not many people talked about it, where he says the criminals on 1-6 murdered the police officer Sicknick, which has been proven completely false, but he said that in front of everybody. No one really commented on that either. Look, at the end of the day, Alexander, I think it was exactly as we called it, to be quite honest. I mean, we nailed this story. We really nailed this story. And it wasn't, I don't want to downplay it. I don't think it was that eventful of an actual meeting. Oh, by the way, 3 hours long, not even 5 hours. A very short 3 hours. I've been on dates that have lasted longer, so I mean, it's a very short meeting, isn't it? Alexander, your thoughts?
Unbelievably short. And as I say, it was supposed to last 5 hours and only three. And you said very little, and you don't want to downplay it. I'm going to completely downplay it and say it was practically nothing, as summits go. And I can remember lots of summits between Russians and American leaders. I mean, I remember summits between Nixon and Brezhnev, and I remember summits between Gorbachev and Reagan, and they changed the world. This one, I don't think anybody's going to remember it in a few weeks. I mean, it was an extraordinarily aimless, unfocused, vague affair. The two leaders came. It's quite obvious that Biden wasn't there to answer any difficult questions. As you rightly said, he didn't talk to the Russian media at all. The only Russian journalist he spoke to was one who works for an American media channel. I mean, it was quite
Voice of
bizarre,
America,
actually.
correct?
Exactly,
Voice of
exactly. Absolutely. And asked him, and of course immediately asked him about Navalny. If you follow the Western media, the entire summit meeting was about Navalny. I mean, that's you'd assume from some of the headlines that that was the primary topic of discussion. I don't think that was what it was at all. I think there was some kind of an agenda before the summit to get Biden to sort of warn Putin on, and say, unless you play ball with us and cut your links with China, you're going to be in serious trouble. And that, if you go along with what we want, we give you lots of money from our new G7 slush fund. But I think in the end, if that actually happened, which I'm not even sure it did, it was done in such an unconvincing way because, to be straightforward about it, Biden is such a poor and weak messenger for that kind of thing. That, I mean, it had no impact. So, they're going to send diplomats back. They're going to talk about strategic arms, but they're not going to negotiate. It's important to stress the only thing they're talking about at the moment is reopening, restarting a dialogue. Well, dialogue isn't negotiations. There's no agreement to set up a meeting in, say, Helsinki or Vienna and appoint negotiators and start negotiating a new strategic arms treaty or anything like that. They're going to talk about cyberspace. Well, that's, I think, somewhat new because up to now the US has resisted talking about cyberspace. But then we get this utterly surreal thing from Biden. He comes along and says, I told Putin that there's these 16 organizations, entities, structures, I'm not quite sure what they are, in the United States, which is an absolute red line. If the Russians hack them or launch cyber attacks against them, there'll be this enormous response. What happened? happens if the Russians attack something that isn't on that list? What if we have, it's almost inviting, if you like, the Russians to attack other parts. I mean, I'm sure that's not what was not the intention. I'm sure that was not what the proposal was intended to convey. But when you do it like that, I mean, that again shows how much of a back of the envelope this thing really was. I mean, you know, but at least they're going to talk about cyberspace and cyber criminals. And that gave Putin, by the way, the opening in his press conference to point out that the place where most of the cyber attacks come from is actually the US. I think he said Canada, and, you know, Russia's far down on the list. Well, that's what he said. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. But, you know, some talk about that. Ukraine was touched on, but apparently barely discussed. And there was also some discussion about sorting out things in the Arctic and, you know, not making the Arctic a major zone of confrontation, which apparently was talked about in a little bit more detail. I'm sure that came more from the Russians than from the Americans, to be truthful. So, I mean, you know, it was all so low-key that it was almost so low-key that it was silent. I mean, you know, and a three-hour meeting tells you that nothing very much of substance was really talked about. There was no real meeting of minds. They just talked, each of them. It was perfectly polite, apparently, and, as they like to say, constructive, which means to say civil in this context. But I don't think anything very much happened or anything was really discussed. So it was more like the appearance of a summit than an actual summit. I mean, you know, you have the two leaders, they come to Geneva, they have their, you know, their press corps in tow, they have all the security people, they have all the cameras there, but in reality, I mean, it's not Khrushchev versus Kennedy, Brezhnev versus Nixon, Reagan versus Gorbachev. It was nothing like that. I mean, it was just an aimless, even pointless affair.
Yeah, it was like two world leaders getting together for lunch. I mean, that's what it was.
Except they didn't even do that, apparently. Yeah. I mean, they didn't even sit down for lunch together. I mean, it was at one time apparently suggested that they might do. So they didn't. I mean, they just had a nice little brief chat in a you know, book lined room in a nice villa in Geneva, and then they went off on their separate ways. I mean, it was just a very weird thing.
All right. So there wasn't much of
no.
There wasn't much substance to the summit, that's for sure. But we've been saying that now for a week, that this summit wasn't really about the actual summit per se. It was about what's going to happen afterwards, or what each country is looking to gain from this afterwards. We said that that the Biden White House is looking to probably get some leverage on Russia so they can focus on China. We also said that the Biden White House is definitely, at least the communications department, as well as the Democrats, are definitely looking at this summit so that they can score media and NPR points. Once again, portray Biden as the strong, confident leader. America is back. Build back better. We're here to save Europe. We're here to save the world. You know, Trump couldn't do what I'm doing. Trump is a Putin puppet. I'm not. I stare down the empire, the evil emperor, and, you know, look at me. And that's what he said. I did what I came to do. That's what he meant by
that's
that.
Right. That's and, right.
and,
that's right.
Okay, he's doing that. He's saying it out loud. That's what he came to do, and that's what he did. 3 hours, that's what he did. So we said that. We said much of this is about giving the media, you know, something, fuel to go on for the next 3-4 months. You also noted that much of Russia's goal here was to just buy time. They know a swift ban, the banking system and the banking financial communication system is coming. They know more sanctions are coming, so they wanted to buy time, and I think they successfully did that. 3-6 months, who knows? In essence, both countries got what they wanted out of this, or not even now. They're going to get what they wanted out of this 3-hour meeting. So it's kind of like saying, let's meet for 3 hours, and the real benefits of this meeting are going to come afterwards. And we know what Biden, the Democrats, and the U.S. is going to get from this, which is more Russia demonization, more Biden, you know, hooray for Biden media stuff. And Russia's going to get time, which is what they were looking for.
Yes, yes, exactly. But I mean, let's just unpack that, because of course time is a valuable commodity. We all have to understand that time matters. So, you know, even if you get only 3 months, and I put it at perhaps no more than that, actually, I think in 3 months' time we're going to start seeing things getting seriously worse again. At least 3 months makes a difference. It allows you more time to prepare for your disconnection from SWIFT, more time to shore up your defences, more time to develop and deploy some of your new weapon systems. I mean, the Russians are already saying that they're on the verge now of deploying their new S-500 surface-to-air missiles, for example. So time is a tangible gain. What the Americans are gaining, which is PR, is not tangible. You can't bank it. You can bank time to some extent, but you can't bank, you know, PR that has no real actual value. So from that point of view, I don't see that the US has actually gained very much. The Biden administration may have done. The press corps might have gained something. They've all had a nice story. They've had now photo ops. Some of them had the opportunity to be rude at Putin, which is something that they're all very keen to do, because they know that being rude to Putin is a way to get an editor's attention and perhaps to increase in your state, you know, your position in the media hierarchy. But in reality, treading water in this way, which is what the US is doing with this summit, is not a good idea, because of course in diplomacy, in foreign policy, you don't move forward, you move back. That is the way it works. And it's now increasingly looking likely that in a month's time Putin will be in Beijing to celebrate the 100th anniversary of the foundation of China's Communist Party, where he will be the guest of honour. And of course the meetings, if he does go, the meetings he's going to have with Xi Jinping and the Chinese are going to be far more substantive than this aimless discussion he's just had in Geneva. Now, you know, that doesn't mean that you need to go down the same route as the Chinese are going to go with the Russians. You can take a very tough line with the Russians if you like, but if you're not going to talk about substance, if you're not going to come up with real issues to talk about, then it's better perhaps not to waste your time pretending and going through the motions of something that in the end isn't achieving anything. And that's my own feeling about this.
Listening to you right now, a thought just came to my mind, and I have some other questions I want to ask you later. But can you say that the Americans were also looking for time and they got it? And what do I mean by that? They want time to keep on carrying Biden. And so they were looking to portray some sort of image of a different Biden than the narrative that say Fox News, I'll just pick one, Fox News gives out. We give out. Everyone gives out the narrative of Sleepy Joe. So can you say that they may have bought 3 to 6 months where they can now go back to the United States and, like we said, portray an image of a strong, capable, confident, very tough Biden? Do you think you could say they also maybe bought some time as far as the narrative with Joe Biden is concerned?
Well, I think that's absolutely right. But that, of course, is not buying time for your country. It may be buying time for your party and for your domestic political positioning. But of course, it is throwing your country's time away. It's like treating time. There's a famous speech that Winston Churchill made in the 30s about the year of the locust. When you're eating away what your time is, you're squandering your time on political games, because that's what you're really doing. I mean, it's all very well, but the whole world doesn't stop for the Democrats. I think
tell that to them.
I know. Well, I know exactly. But the rest of the world is going to continue to, make its moves. And yes, the Russians, as I said, they've got probably 3 months, which will mean that they won't have sanctions. They'll get Nord Stream 2 done. They'll get themselves sorted out further for, you know, disconnecting from SWIFT. They'll have dumped all the dollar assets from their national welfare fund. They'll have done all of those things in those three months. For the Biden-Harris administration to use these extra 3 months or whatever it is, or whatever time they've got to sort of project the image of Biden as a great leader, and, you know, to sort of move it closer to the point where the transition to Kamala Harris, if that's what's coming, is going to be prepared more smoothly. Well, that doesn't really help the United States at all. It might help the Democrats, but they are in charge of the United States. They are responsible for what the US itself does. So, I mean, they're not using time there. They're squandering it. They may be using it in their own interests. But if you like, they are eating America's time. They are eating their own time for themselves. They're taking time away from the United States, and they're misusing it for their own interests.
Right. Okay, so let's stay with the media then real quick. And I actually watched ABC, NBC during the Putin press conference and during the Biden press conference. I also jumped on to Fox News. I jumped on to RT. And then I also jumped on to a lot of the YouTube, say, conservative right analysts, people who pretty much supported Trump during the election. Many of these libertarian, many of these conservative right libertarian analysts, very big channels, by the way, that I saw. And I'm going to make a statement here, and I want you to comment on it. Both the left and the right and everyone in between completely got this summit wrong and have a complete misunderstanding about what Russia is and what they're aiming to do. And what do I mean by that? The left, the basic narrative of the left was the neoliberal left, the progressive left, whatever. The basic narrative was strong Biden takes on authoritarian dictator Putin. The basic narrative of the right, conservative, libertarian, YouTube, Fox, you name it, was weak Biden takes on authoritarian dictator Putin. And every single analyst, left, right, center, talked about Ukraine, the coup, an invasion in Europe, Russia expanding to take over Europe, journalists being killed, Magnitsky, you know, the basically everything the NBC guy during his interview of Putin spewed out, which means that the propaganda on Russia and on Putin is definitely working. And this is a terrible situation for the United States because they have no understanding of the countries they are dealing with. And that's a big disadvantage because Russia, China understand, I believe, they understand how the U.S. is working and the U.S. media. The U.S. media, they're clueless. And we don't have a time to go over Ukraine and the coup d'etat. No. And Magnitsky and all that stuff. Maybe one day we'll do a series of shows about that so we could set the record straight. To this day, they are absolutely clueless as to what happened, what's going on, and what Russia is looking to get. What do you make of the statement I just said with how the media, all media, has a complete lack of understanding when it came to this summit and what each side was looking to get out of it?
I think you're absolutely completely correct. I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, the Democrats talk about strong Biden, you know, standing up to autocrat Putin. The Republicans, or rather, you know, the sort of conservatives talk about weak Biden crumbling before strong Putin. The reality is quite different. And the reality of Russia is completely different from what these people imagine. What the reality is, on the contrary, as I said, is that the Russians sorting out their defences. Now, you talked about the Russians knowing an awful lot about what the Americans are up to and how it works than the Americans are when it comes to Russia. Of course, it's important to understand that the Russians read American newspapers, follow American news. They know what the US is saying about them. And what they get from all this is relentless, extreme hostility. Either when there's a negotiation, either it's a case of, you know, America is strong and gets what it wants, or America is weak and it collapses. It's all a binary game. And there's never any suggestion or discussion about seeking mutually acceptable compromises. So given that that is so, the Russians must come away with this, with saying to themselves, well, look, we can't really negotiate arms control treaties with the Americans. We can't really agree any problems with them, be it the Middle East, be it Ukraine, be it anything else, because the Americans are so trapped in their narratives that they can't actually negotiate meaningfully with us. On the contrary, they are so consumed with their antagonism to us that the only thing we can realistically do is, as we said before, buy time in order to prepare our own defences for the storm which we know sooner or later is going to come. And I think you're absolutely right about this. By the way, I noticed the same thing. I also noticed something else, which is, of course, this endless trope that you see repeated about Russia being this declining power, which is the other one that you get to, you know, the country with the GDP the size of Italy, Texas, or the Galapagos Islands. Take your pick, whichever it is. The idea that, you know, you can somehow bully and you know, it'll just go away, and if you act tough towards it, it won't really. It's somehow inconsequential at the same time. And again, what that reflects is an inability of these people to deal with Russia, the real country. Understand that the Russians have interests, have concerns, that they're not impressed by the US in the way that they perhaps used to be, and that they're not going to really move unless the United States starts to address those interests. And that's what I think the problem is. I think you're absolutely spot on. I think your analysis was totally right. And unless people in the US start to revisit the Magnitsky affair, Ukraine, Russiagate, all of those massive mess up of things, it's going to be very, very difficult for them to start making realistic decisions based on US interests. Donald Trump, in his complex and, you know, instinctual way, I think had some understanding of this, but the media and political class in Washington, which is essentially, to all intents and purposes, one and the same, doesn't. They're fighting a fantasy country that doesn't exist. They imagine that they're up against Sauron and Mordor rather than a real place. I mean, it's a very strange way that they talk about it.
Yeah, I was just about to say the same thing, that Trump understood that this wasn't a binary thing when dealing with countries in general. And what a missed opportunity the world had when Trump was president, because there was a president that was willing to speak with the other side and to search for some sort of compromise. He was tough. I'm not saying he was tough, and he played the media well, and he made bold statements and crazy statements via Twitter, but that was part of his game. Absolutely. At the end of the day, he knew how to sit across the table from a world leader and figure out ways to search for solutions and to find compromise. And the left and the right would not let him do that because they are stuck in these caricature narratives of various countries, whether it's Russia, North Korea, etc. They're stuck in these caricature binary models as to how they view the other side. It's very childish, to be quite honest. It shows a media that is very immature, like little kids. And I'm saying left, right, and a lot of independent alternative channels. They don't understand the intricacies of geopolitics and what happened in certain instances, like Magnitsky, like Ukraine, like Russiagate.
No,
they don't take that into account.
They live in a cartoon world, but of course the world isn't really like that. That's not how the world works. The world is not a cartoon. And you know, the days when, you know, the United States was powerful enough that it could sort of carry, you know, have some illusions about something and carry on. Those have gone. And the bizarre thing is, as the United States faces more serious adversaries, it seems that the retreat into this cartoon world gets ever stronger. And it's actually really worrying because they don't seem to understand that in order to negotiate with some, with another side, that involves give and take. And that means also give as well as take. You can't just come along and say, you know, to someone like Putin, look, I want you to, we're going to improve relations in some way. You know, we're not going to say quite what we're going to do, but we want you to release Navalny, open up your entire political system, let us have every, you know, unimpeded access to your economy. You agree to hand back Crimea to Ukraine, pull out your support for the people in the Donbass, agree to Ukraine joining NATO, give up Assad. I mean, you know, this, the world doesn't work like that. And making those sort of demands simply perpetuates confrontation. And of course, there is somebody out there now who is, you know, quietly watching and waiting as events turn out in his favour, and that's Xi Jinping in China. I come back to this. I actually read a fascinating article in Global Times, which is this Chinese newspaper, which is said that all that China needs to do is wait. And that's what, that's all they're doing, because they of course are the masters of time. They know exactly how to use time. You know, they're this country that's used time always to its advantage. And they realise that time at the moment is on their side. It's working out in their favour because the US isn't fighting, isn't dealing with things in the real world. It's instead trapped inside its cartoon world. And when you are in that kind of situation, then of course you're going to lose.
All right. On the subject of time, to wrap up the video, Navalny. It doesn't look like he has much time, if you want my opinion. And I say this very, I'm very worried, because the media cannot stop talking about Navalny and Navalny meeting some sort of perishing, some sort of a tragic outcome.
Yeah.
They kept on harping on this over and over and over and over and over again. And this is very worrying. What does this tell you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it almost gives you the impression that they know it's going to happen. Which I have to say, I find that very alarming indeed. I mean, what do they know which we don't? Because I don't really see any real threat to him from anyone in Russia. I mean, why would the Russians want to kill him at this particular point in time? I mean, I can't see the logic of that at all. I don't think that this is a real issue. I don't think that this is a real problem. It's a phony problem. And yet, we see it being, you know, broadcast and kept up relentlessly. And, of course, one has to wonder whether perhaps the intention is that perhaps he does die. And then, of course, that's the pretext for the devastating, consequences that Biden talked about in his news conference. Whether that's setting up the scene for something like that. That would be a disastrous mistake, by the way. That would be a recklessness taken to the point of absurdity. And again, I mean, Russians who follow this, and of course they do follow this. I mean, this is an important thing to say. I mean, Russians are very, very familiar with what the West says about them. I mean, it's very easy to access the Western media in Russia. Russians must be utterly baffled by this. They must be completely bemused, given how lack of support there is for Navalny. Well, how inconsequential in Russia he is. It's like, you know, you find some blogger who blogs in some sort of way in the US, and you raise him up into some kind of epochal figure. I mean, it must look very strange to them, and again, very weird.
I'm baffled by it. I have to admit, yeah. I'm baffled by it because I just don't understand the mainstream media's fascination, not only with Navalny. They took it a step further. They're tying Navalny to a death. Every single question was
absolutely
Navalny dying, Navalny absolutely dying. Before, they weren't saying that. Now they're saying that, and they're saying that in hyperdrive. It's something's going to go down.
Well, I know. I have to say, I agree. I mean, I find it deeply disturbing. I mean, I find it very strange, actually, and very worrying indeed. I mean, you know, I don't want to anticipate anything, but I mean, it does make me wonder whether somebody doesn't know that something is going to happen, because it does seem extraordinary.
Did the Russians catch this, you think?
Oh, yes. I've no doubt they did. I think by now they figure that out very well. As I said, but I think the Russians probably have calculated that if it's not Navalny, it's going to be something else, because sooner or later, I mean, given how, given how false and crazed the narrative about them is in the United States now, it's only a question of time before something happens. If it's not Navalny, it'll be somewhere else where you're going to have another major confrontation between Russia and the US. It's now baked in the cake.
It's baked in the cake, yeah. We gained maybe 3 months.
Maybe 3 months, if that. I mean, they'll get Nord Stream 2 done. That's the other thing they'll manage.
Yeah. All right. We'll leave it there, guys. Go to Super U, free speech video platform. Check us out on BitChute and on Odyssey. Go to our locals page. And, of course, the Durant Shop, 10% off when you use the code REALNEWS. Take care.